Hello and welcome to another edition of Critical Q&A, the show where I answer your questions based on what you left me in the comments section of my Q&A videos or have sent me by email at askchrisshelton@gmail.com. Last night I had a wonderful evening, by the way. Thought I'd let you guys know Tony Ortega from the Underground Bunker was here in town on his book tour for The Unbreakable Miss Lovely, his new book about Paulette Cooper and the harassment that she suffered at Scientology's hands for years back in the 70s and 80s. And it was a great event. I got to interview him. And that whole event was videoed. I videoed that, and I'm actually uploading that today. So not only will you have a critical Q&A video, but you'll also have that interview up for your viewing pleasure. And now let's get on with your questions. Harrison Bergeron. After going clear and the media backlash, the image of the church is all but destroyed. However, shadow organizations such as Narconon still lure an unsuspecting public. What other organizations exist that the public should be made aware of? Scientology has a whole group of what they call social betterment corporations, or SBCs. And Narconon is one of those. That is their secular drug rehabilitation program. I could talk about that all day long. They're tied up in all kinds of lawsuits right now for fraud and abuse, and also deaths. Actual deaths have occurred at Narconon facilities. You know, I recently put out a video about the purification rundown and the pseudoscience of that, and the fact that it's a very harmful, potentially harmful program. There have been deaths at Narconon facilities of people who were doing that purification program, and so if you want to know if that thing is harmful or not, well, you know, Narconon uses that, so there you go. In addition to Narconon, there are other SBCs, other social betterment corporations, such as the Way to Happiness Foundation, which is, I think their central location is in Burbank, California, and they're really just a sort of a pamphlet distributing group. They get in donations for printing of these books called The Way to Happiness by L. Ron Hubbard, which is basically a common sense moral code that he put out in the early 80s. And so the Way to Happiness group publishes those and distributes them throughout the world, and likes to claim with no proof whatsoever that they've, you know, dealt with horrible civic or civil situations or crime situations just by passing out this book in various areas and getting people to, I don't know, look at it or something. It's kind of silly. I made some notes here, so I'll consult them because I don't want to miss any of these. There's also a group called Applied Scholastics, which is responsible for getting Hubbard's study methodology into schools, and they have not been having very good success with that. They have a central campus in, I think, outside St. Louis, Missouri, where they pull in, they get teachers from various countries or in various areas to go and learn Hubbard's study methods, and then send them back out to, you know, put them in the schools. And this is kind of something to beware of, but I haven't heard anything from those guys in years. I don't know how active they still are. There's Criminon. Criminon is the criminal handling program where they have criminals. They go into prisons and they do these programs where the criminals will read the Way to Happiness book and do various other Scientology educational activities and supposedly rehabilitate criminals that way. And again, no evidence, no proof, no real, you know, backing on that, but they get into various prisons around the world and do that. There is also the Youth for Human Rights group, which was a woman named Mary Shuttleworth, and her son actually really were the impetus of that program. Scientology kind of latched onto it after Mary got going with that. And what they do is they put a little booklet together that explains human rights to children, which is really basically not a bad thing, actually. It's based on the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which was something that Eleanor Roosevelt put out many, many years ago. It's an outstanding document. There's nothing wrong with the Universal Declaration for Human Rights. And Mary Shuttleworth latched onto that And they put a little music video together, and they put this little pamphlets together, and they go around, you know, teaching children about human rights. And I don't know, I kind of have a little bit of a hard time seeing that, you know, much of a problem with that, except for the fact, of course, that it's, you know, being used by Scientology. Scientology kind of glommed onto that and started claiming credit for it and that sort of thing, because Mary Shuttleworth is a Scientologist. So anyway, that's something that's running around, and they do various activities and events and whatnot to popularize human rights. Of course, the ultimate irony there is that Scientology is one of the largest abusers of human rights in the world. So the fact that they're pushing a human rights agenda on kids is, you know, the ultimate in hypocrisy, really. And finally, the last group, and probably the one that is the biggest moneymaker for Scientology, all these groups so far, Narconon is a big moneymaker for Scientology through the credit card fraud and insurance scams that they run on people coming in and doing those drug detoxification programs. These other ones are not real moneymakers, which is probably why we're not hearing too much about them. They don't really have a lot of potential to make much money with these. But this last group is called the World Institute of Scientology Enterprises, or WISE, W-I-S-E. And that group uses, what their thing is they promote Hubbard's business administration methodologies and try to get them into non-Scientology companies, right? Any company who's looking for a business consultant can end up finding one of these WISE trained consultants who go in and try to implement Hubbard's administrative methods in the company. And this is, you know, you might have heard about, you know, statistics that Scientology uses, and they have graphs, and everybody's got a statistic, and they have to, you know, keep that statistic going up, 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 meaning they're getting more and more production all the time. And various, there's a whole slew of things that Hubbard said, you know, organizations should do to be successful. And of course, if Scientology was a little bit more successful, then maybe those methodologies might be worth something. But as it is, they are wildly unsuccessful, and those the administrative principles, as far as I'm concerned, are mostly not worth the paper that they're written on. They're awful, and I found that after, you know, leaving Scientology's employment and trying to think with and implement some of that out in the real world, just fell on my face over and over again. And I started to see, kind of like you see, you know, when you wake up and start looking at what Scientology's effects really are, you start seeing the effects of Hubbard's administrative know-how in the real world, and you find it's just disastrous. So, but they charge a lot of money. The WISE guys charge a lot of money for their business consulting, and more importantly, and this is where it gets into the church, they will use that business consulting, the consulting, as a gateway to getting those businessmen who happen to mostly be chiropractors and dentists. They really go after, you know, doctors, dentists, chiropractors a lot. And they go and they get those guys funneled into the churches, into Scientology. And of course, you know, doctors, medical personnel, chiropractors generally have a lot of money. And they go after these guys with the idea of consulting their business, but more importantly, dragging them into the church and getting them on onto services there and paying the church a lot of money. And this has been a very lucrative activity for the church over many, many years. There are a couple of companies who really specialize in just getting this business consulting done. Like there's one called Sterling Management, and they have a bunch of consultants, and they send them out and get into businesses and do consulting. And then they work to get those people, you know, into Scientology. So that's something to really be aware of. If you ever run across any of this, or this comes across any of your business lines, just run. Don't walk in the opposite direction, because the only reason that WISE has anything to do with any real world businesses is they're looking to just make new Scientologists. So those are some of the groups you can beware of. Fred Claret. Is there any chance of the Church of Scientology becoming a hot political item, perhaps being championed by a particular politician? Isn't it time a well-known politician took a stand and made it clear to the Church of Scientology that it's living on borrowed time and needs to initiate its own reforms or face investigation? Well, Fred, in a word, yeah, it's way past time for somebody to do something about this. And I think as the abuses become more and more known about and pop, you know, and talked about in the media, I think there's more and more chances that something like this could happen. But you know, truthfully, like realistically, I'm not expecting any politician to really stand up and start demanding anything about the Church of Scientology because of, one, the potential repercussions to the politician personally if the church decided to go after that politician, and two, I have yet to see any constituency or any voter base that is like demanding in mass that the church, that something be done about the Church of Scientology. It's a very small group of people, the church is. I mean, we're talking about 30, 40,000 people. And this isn't really on too many people's radar as far as real world politics go. So those of us who are in the know about Scientology, of course, are irate and very, very upset that the IRS isn't taking more you know, open and effective action, that the FBI hasn't stepped in and done something. But you know, there's just a lot of process there to go through in order for those agencies to move forward. And I think that they are probably keeping their eye on Scientology, but as far as a politician moving on it, I'm not holding my breath. Mirror Thetan. Does Dave have any humanity or kindness in him? I mean, look how he has treated Shelley. Do you think that he may have been a decent person if he hadn't become a Scientologist? Or if he would have still been a little arsehole, but maybe on a smaller scale? Betty Andrews. I'm interested in learning about David Miscavige's human side, and whether he even has one, because I don't believe anyone can be all bad or all good. Is he ever seen to laugh, like a proper side-splitting laugh? Or does he, as I picture, only do evil Muttley snickers into his sleeve while watching high-ranking public's videoed auditing sessions? Has he ever been known to show kindness to anybody? Is it the worst-kept secret amongst the Sea Org that Laurice Stukenbrock is more than a glorified PA? Has anyone seen them skipping, holding hands through the detritus of Tom and Nicole's wildflower meadow? Does David Miscavige ever give, or does he only ever take away? Okay, well, the deal is that I have met David Miscavige twice in my life, and both times, once was in a briefing, and the other time was a very short conversation between him and I. And other than that, I never worked directly with the man. So, honestly speaking, I can't really talk much about what David Miscavige is like personally. I don't know the guy. You know, there's a lot of stories about him. I've talked to tons of ex-Scientologists who did work with him, who do know him. And, you know, he's a human being. Of course he has a human side, and of course he has, you know, laughs at jokes and, you know, gets out and pulls pranks and does various silly things like anybody else does. And I'm sure he, you know, runs the full gamut of emotions just like any other human being and has interests and desires just like everybody. My conjecture about David Miscavige is that he's got some pretty twisted ideas of how life is supposed to work. And I don't think, you know, I can't say whether Scientology did or didn't cause that to be that way, but I know for sure it didn't help. It certainly didn't tone down any of his sociopathic impulses or, you know, give him a lighter, fluffier side. That's for sure. If anything, Scientology and L. Ron Hubbard's influence on him as a young man only served to make him worse and bring out whatever bad side he had and make it 10,000 times worse than it might have already have been. So that's really about all I can say about David Miscavige with any degree of accuracy. And, you know, there's other people who knew him, worked with him for years. Mike Rinder, Marty Rathbun, Jesse Prince are a few who come to mind. And they're out there and they are contactable on this point. And so if, you know, if you want more information about that with direct, you know, eyewitness observation, we'd have to ask them. R.L. Steve. Did you recall much in the way of past lives in your auditing? Any past life that was really outrageous or incredible? Did the memories feel real? And now that you're out, what are your views on the past lives that you remembered? The subject of past life memories in Scientology are certainly one of the most interesting things about it. And I'm sure there's a lot of things that I could say about this, but I'm going to try to keep this kind of short and to the point. Yes, I did run past lives when I was in Scientology. The degree of believability about what I was running was sometimes good and sometimes bad. Sometimes I felt like I was just making answers up just to satisfy the question that was being asked of me. Other times I thought I was actually recalling something that seemed kind of real. You know, as real as a memory of maybe when I was 4 years old this time around. It's a little hard to say what is and isn't real when it comes to memories, especially given the studies on this and how unreliable our memories are. But when it was happening, I felt fairly confident that a lot of what I was remembering was real. But as far as, you know, do I believe everything that I can remember I remembered in Scientology? No, not really. No, not so much. Some of them were pretty outrageous. I don't have any, you know, I'm not going to get into the specifics of it, but I never thought that I was Jesus Christ or anybody famous in history or anything like that. I refuse to go into that sort of thinking because I never thought of myself as anybody that special. And, now or back then. So now that I'm out, I pretty much have the idea that most of that was pretty made up. Just done in order to satisfy the questions that I was being asked. And I was in an environment where it was expected and agreed upon by everybody that, you know, you would find these kind of answers, these past life answers to the questions. And there was really no other way sometimes to get out of the auditing and answer the question that was being asked than to come up with some past life answer. So, you know, I look back at those conditions and the whole environment and the way the whole thing was set up, and I think, you know, that was pretty, that was a lot of thought control going on there and a lot of mental manipulation going on in order to get me to, you know, come up with those answers. So I don't really trust them, and I don't really feel like there's any degree of validity to those, or at least they're certainly open to a lot of question as to their validity. So I don't really think about it much, and I don't put any stock in it, and I have a lot more attention on my future than I do on my past. Brain Soap. Hi Chris, you said that believing there is no God is a belief that requires faith. What about Russell's teapot and the knowledge that belief is a comforting and pleasant thing for poor, rather smart mammals that are burdened with self-awareness and knowledge of their future death? In science, there is never certainty, but the evidence and the historical evidence seems to show that religion and the idea of God is man-made, and therefore, although not 100% certain, the default position until data supports the hypothesis of theism is atheism. I know atheism is a dirty word these days, thanks to militant atheists, but what are your thoughts on being tolerant of non-harmful belief, but not believing? Okay, well, this is a deep, deep, murky pool, and I'm, you know, again, finding myself here where I'm just going to kind of dip my toe in it and talk about it for a minute or two and see if this helps answer the question. I don't think that belief, religious belief or other kinds of belief or faith, are things that could necessarily be approached or dealt with in a scientific manner, because the claims of belief that there is a God, for example, I believe that there is a God, or I believe Jesus Christ is my personal savior and by accepting him I will be allowed into heaven, these are not scientific falsifiable claims. You can't prove or disprove the existence of God. No one can, right? So as a scientist or from a scientific approach, you go, well, the default position is atheism. Well, I guess if you're talking about it from a, you know, from a falsifiable question, you could assume that, but belief isn't subject to scientific method or scientific falsification because it's not provable. So it's kind of a little oil and water a little bit there. In other words, they don't mix so well. And I think this is where some atheists fall down, and I think this is where some fundamentalists or, you know, religious believers fall down too, is trying to have this argument when they don't, you know, there is no argument really, and because the terms of the activity are different, and so they don't go together well. And I hope I'm speaking clearly here. Now, when religion or believers do make claims that are falsifiable, that can be proven, that can be taken up in a scientific way and disproven, for example, young Earth creationists claiming that the Earth is 6,000 years old, period. Now, that's a claim you can falsify. You can provide evidence to show that that claim is not true. So there's a line that religion can cross, or that belief can cross, where it moves into falsifiable claims. And I don't have any problem with people, you know, taking those claims down using evidence and evidence-based thinking to disprove those ideas or those specific claims. But there comes a point that only goes so far. And there's a point where you are moving into areas of unfalsifiability, where you cannot prove or disprove the belief. That's what makes it a belief. That's what makes it faith, right? And I think it gets kind of silly and useless to talk about, you know, that kind of faith or belief in, you know, using scientific terms. I think they, you know, again, I think it just becomes a kind of a round and round we go, and where we stop, we're never going to stop, because we're going to keep going round and round on this. And that's why I don't want to get into that debate or into that fight particularly, nor do I think that it's very important, because people are going to believe what they're going to believe regardless of what evidence you keep throwing at them to tell them to stop believing it. That's not going to change a person's faith or belief. It doesn't work that way. So, you know, and you know, I've talked before, or I was talking to some friends before about, the Bible. The Bible keeps, you know, atheists really like, you know, harping on the Bible and the logic of the Bible and the things that are in the Bible and how the Bible doesn't make any sense. Well, I'm sorry, but most Christians and most people who of faith, the Bible is symbolic for them. The Bible is not literal, and the Bible is not something that they base their faith is not based on that book. It's based on what makes them feel good, and it's based on what they want to think about their relationship with God. And you can point out illogics and, you know, that there was slavery in the Bible and this in the Bible and that in the Bible. They don't care, because that's not why they believe what they believe. So that's why my take on this, and the way that I see that both sides can be right about it, is to be tolerant of each other, right? And to not, to throw the intolerance away, because it doesn't serve any purpose, you know, because people will believe what they're going to believe. And as far as, you know, the atheists go or the non-believers go, that's fine too. You know, if you want to think that there is no God and there never has been and there never will be, and it's just a man-made construct to make people feel better about dying, go right ahead. I don't have any problem with that, and neither should anybody else. And that's, you know, where I'm calling for tolerance on both sides. And I think that we should just be allowed to think whatever we want to think about that. And as long as it's not harmful and as long as people aren't hurting each other over it, I think that tolerance, you know, and an understanding that belief is going to exist regardless, or unbelief is going to exist regardless of what arguments get thrown one side or the other. You know, if we could all just kind of, you know, deal with the fact that that is a reality, then we could move on and maybe work together on some more constructive things. James Smart. Being as the Church of Scientology believes that the universe is trillions of years old instead of the 13.5 billion it actually is, and given the whole Xenu story in OT3, how does the Church of Scientology deal with natural history as has been deduced through science? This is really simple. Science is wrong. And that's what Scientologists think. Hubbard is the guy who has it all figured out, and everybody else just hasn't caught up to him yet. And if you sort of look at any destructive cult in that light, not just Hubbard, but Sun Myung Moon or Jim Jones or David Koresh or any of those guys, all of their followers believe that those guys, those cult leaders, have it all figured out, and everybody else just hasn't caught up with them yet. And that's how all of that works. Okay, the time has flown, and we are now at the end of another episode of our critical Q&A. This was a lot of fun going over some of this, and some of these questions could take up an entire video, or two or three, or hours of time. And I know I'm just glossing over some of this information, but I'm trying to do the best I can. So thanks for sticking with me on this, and I will see you again soon. Thank you for watching.